Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms Subteam for Data Call held on Wednesday, the 6th of June, 2018 at 1700 UTC. On today's call, we have Susan Payne, Christine Durain, Greg Reffert, Philip Corwin, Rebecca Tushnet, and we have Brian Beckham, who is on the audio only. We have apologies from Lori Schulman. From staff, we have Ariel Liang, Julie Hedlund, Barry Cobb, Mary Wong, and myself, Andrea Glandon. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thanks, Andrea. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. Thanks, everyone, for joining. So the agenda today is to discuss the proposed survey questions and suggested changes by analysis group. And just to note, this is the opportunity for analysis group who are on the call, our guests, to present the draft surveys and to in particular call out the comments and questions that they have for the subteam and for the subteam to also review the material. We do note the short time frame for the subteam to review the material prior to this call. But we do hope that we can, that staff and the analysis group can help to make this a productive session. And because we don't have a particular chair for this subgroup, staff would like to suggest that that I could chair, if that's okay with subgroup members, and then turn it over to the analysis group to run through the surveys. But let me ask if there are any objections to staff facilitating as chair, or we are happy to have one of the members of the subteam chair. But we do realize that with the short time frame in getting the materials out and so on, it might be easier if staff chaired. And I'm not seeing any hands up, I'm seeing no objection from Christine. Thank you, and no objection from Susan. Thank you very much. And so we're going to suggest, oh, I'm seeing people are having trouble hearing me. Is this better, talking louder? Let me just ask that. A little better. Susan says yes. Okay. I'm afraid I'm on the Adobe Connect audio, but I'll talk a little more loudly. I did have difficulty connecting by phone. So anyway, I hope this is better. And staff would like to suggest that we pull up the draft surveys in their clean form, since the red line form seems quite difficult to follow. And those also do contain comments from analysis group, and the order as they appeared in the table of surveys that was also in the RFP appendix is registry operators, registrars, trademark brand owners, and potential registrants, and we'll go ahead and put that order here just so that you all can see it. Christine is saying we can adjust the mic volume in Adobe Connect, so maybe I will try to do that as well. So we have the registry operator survey up, and we have it unsynced at this point so that you can all move it as you like. I'm going to see if we can, if you want to make it a little bit smaller, then we can try to go to the comments. Now, unfortunately, I see that the comments do not appear, do not seem to appear here in the PDF. There's the highlighting where some items are highlighted. But I do see that Phil is asking, shouldn't we be looking at the red line so we can see how AG has proposed to change our questions? So the comments would need to, okay. Let me ask this, because Phil's raised a question first. What is the preference of the sub-team? To go through the surveys as red line or as clean versions. And staff is working on producing PDF version where the comments show, because we really do need to have that. There's a special way you have to save it in PDF for that to work. And Mary's noting that staff did think it would be easier to review the clean versions for this call, but I can say that the redline versions are quite difficult to read through. Is there anybody else who's concerned about looking at the Christine, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine, and I'm not trying to belabor the point about not having time to review, but I think this is one of our concerns, is that we needed the opportunity to really look at what was added and review those red lines. For my purposes, I don't know if it will help everyone else. I do think looking at the red line is very helpful. And so what I've done is I have the luxury of two screens, and so I've opened the red line up on one of my screens, and I have Adobe Connect up on the other. So, I guess we could sort of let decide if everybody has that luxury, and if not, then I propose that we look at the red line, because I think what I'm seeing from at least the first page, now that I've had a chance to actually open this, I think it's very important to find out why some of these changes were made and what the intent was with some of these changes. And I know that I'm going back and asking myself, is that a question that we had originally asked, or if that's a new or added question, and there's just no way to know that unless you're looking at a red line. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. That's really helpful. So what's done here is go ahead and pull up the red line version. So it's in Adobe Connect. We did provide all of the clean and red line versions to the list this morning, and so we could also ask if you wanted to. It might be easier for sub team members to also try pulling up the document themselves. But we're uploading it right now, as you may see. So it should be coming up. I'm noting just in the chat while the document's coming up that Greg and Stacy from Analysis Group could develop a separate document that shows how many changes were made to the sub-team questions. And Susan notes that the red line is challenging, but we need to look at it. And Christina's saying, I'm not sure we need any additional documents at this point. So on your screen now, many thanks, Ariel, is the red line version of the registry operator survey. And you can adjust your screen. Point, Greg and Stacy, might I ask you if you want to go ahead and start walking through the changes that you made and why you made them?
Yes, this is Greg speaking for the record. We'd be happy to start doing that. So this is obviously the registry operator survey. I mean, I think at a really high level, the changes we made were to, where possible, kind of move away from open-ended questions. Some of those just became kind of simple multiple choice. Others we converted to what's called kind of like a 5-point Likert scale. If we identified any potentially kind of leading language, we attempted to change that. We also attempted to simplify some of the language so that it was hopefully a little bit more easily understandable at times. And then there were, just to begin reducing kind of a relatively large number of questions, there were some questions that the data subteam had developed that we're proposing basically be removed from the survey. I think at a really high level, those are the changes that we implemented in both the registry operator survey, but across all of the other surveys for the different groups. I think in looking at this first page of the survey that hopefully everyone has up now, you'll also see text in brackets, basically at the end of, I think, almost every question or in most questions. Those are essentially kind of coding instructions for when we move the survey to being an online survey and out of this Word document. So, for example, when it says brackets, open text field, that's going to be an area where someone can just type essentially whatever they would like to type. Hopefully it's relevant to the question at hand. There are also, you'll see on this first page, there are some brackets that say multiple choice, yes, no, don't know, not sure. As the options there, they'll be required to select one option and only one option. And then as we move down the survey, you'll see some other questions where the options are a little bit different, and we can talk about those as we get to them. Let me pause there and see, one, Stacey, if you have anything to add that I missed it kind of for the high-level overview, and then if there's any questions before we move on.
No, I think that pretty much summarizes it. So you all noticed that we've moved away from the grid style and turned it into more continuous kind of document style. In that process, at times, as Greg mentioned, we did take out some of the open-ended anecdotal questions. We tried to keep as many of those in as possible, but there are instances where we kept in the data style questions, which were easily yes, no, or a numeric response, and dropped the adjoining explanation. And so if those are important questions and you would really strongly prefer that we include those, then we're open to that conversation.
And I think what will
Greg,
sorry, go ahead.
Just to let you know, Christine Duran has. Christine, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine. I have a question. It's unclear from the red line. I see where you've said, like, you know, it's a numeric field or a text field. Are any questions required, or is every single question optional?
So we can code it either way. I would typically require that the questions be answered. That's, you know, pretty standard survey practice, and so that's at least what I would suggest. But we could allow them to skip questions as well.
Hello, excuse me, Kevin.
This is Christine. Can I ask a follow-up, please?
Yes, of course.
Okay, thank you. I'm wondering if, and maybe I'm diving in too soon, but the first question, what registry operate, is asking the registry operator to identify themselves, sort of like, what's your company? I don't mean you mean what's your company name, because some people have operate different registries under different names. So I'm not entirely sure what you're expecting to get in that field. But you're asking people to self-identify, so this will not be an anonymous survey. Is that the intent?
I think we can certainly remove the question. Our intent there was, you know, it's nice to know a little bit about the respondent. So we, you know, for example, if larger registry operators tended to answer the survey differently than smaller registry operators, and so that's the, kind of the intent of asking, you know, what's the name of the registry operator. But if you think that will cause concern among registry operators, then that question could be removed. We could also indicate in the question that, you know, if you're willing to identify yourself, please do so, but you don't have to answer it, and you can leave the text field blank.
Okay, and one more follow-up then. Thank you. This is Christine. I'm unable to answer the question because I've literally just seen it, and I need to think about it for a minute. But what my initial gut reaction is that should be an optional question, and we'd want to word it to be really we want to word it to be clear, because when I see what do you operate internally at Amazon, we actually call each of our TLDs its own registry. And so even though our company is Amazon Registry Services, that's the name of the business that operates our TLDs, we would possibly, think that meant which TLDs are you the registry operator? So I think the question needs to be tweaked a little bit. I don't know exactly what it is yet, but I think I'm going to suggest that we tweak that. Thank you, and I'll allow someone else to speak. Thanks.
And this is Kathy on audio only. I'd like to join the queue.
Thanks, Kathy. Go ahead.
Okay. Kathy Kleiman, for anybody who hasn't been on the call. So question, Greg, are you going to be keeping a separate list of the registries, especially if this field becomes anonymous? Hypothetically, you could wind up, say, with 50 donuts registries, which are similar to what Christine just mentioned. Donuts has a different name for every one of them. Some of them are really fun, too. What kinds of lists are you reporting to us, the working group, the public, versus the kind that you're keeping in the background?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's actually, I think it's in, that kind of gets to one of the questions or kind of the notes that we had, I think in the first comment in this document, which is, our understanding is that there's interest in getting, at least a decent amount of the raw survey data that comes out of this and sharing it with the data subteam. I think some individuals, for example, registry operators, might want to have their name remain confidential. And so that was one question we had for the subteam was, are you okay getting essentially an anonymized set of responses from individuals where we don't indicate who actually completed the survey? It sounds like the answer probably will be yes, but just wanted to confirm.
And just a note, we have also Phil and then Susan in the queue.
And then Kathy back in the queue. Thanks.
Phil, please go ahead. Phil, if you're speaking, we are not hearing you.
Sorry. Now I'm off mute. Phil again for the record. Two comments. One, I would hope registries wouldn't want to be anonymous, but if they don't answer question one, so be it. But I think we have to make it clear that if there's any question a respondent doesn't want to answer, we're still going to count their other answers. We don't want something like the INTA survey where nearly complete surveys are rejected because one or two questions were skipped for some reason. We should, factor that into the weight we give answers. If there's some question that half the respondents choose not to answer, that should be noted. But we shouldn't require every single question to be answered for the response to be put into the mix. And I think for operators like portfolio operators, whether it's Donuts, Uniregistry, Minds and Machines, whoever, there should be one questionnaire going to them. I presume they have the same policy for all their domains, unless there's some specialty domain with restricted access, and we don't want one registry operator sending back 200 or 300 responses and giving that disproportionate weight. Those were my thoughts. Thank you.
And this is Greg, just really quickly. I agree with both of those points. And I think in terms of allowing people to skip questions, what we'll do for many of these questions, maybe all of them, so for example, in question five, instead of yes, no, don't know, not sure, we'll just add an additional option, which is prefer not to answer. And they can just click that and then go to the next question if they'd like to.
Thank you very much. And I have Susan and then Kathy.
Yeah, hi, it's Susan. I think perhaps
the answer to some of this might depend on how the registry operator selection is planned to be affected. And what I mean by that is if you're going to invite specific registries to respond to the survey, then it perhaps doesn't matter quite so much if they decide they don't want to identify themselves or identify the nature of their registries for want of a better description. But if you were, for example, just planning to kind of issue a bulk invitation to all registry operators of new GTLDs or via the registry stakeholder group or something like that, then it becomes more challenging and there needs to be a bit more clarity then in the instructions that go out saying things like only complete this once for all of your registries and weeding out people that we've discussed on the last call. We didn't want to be answering this survey, which would be the brand TLDs in particular, just simply because they don't operate Sunrise services and it's not, this isn't aimed for them wearing their brand TLD hat. If we were going down that path of just kind of bulk inviting anyone to complete the survey, then there's more reason for needing them to kind of identify who they are. And if they don't want to be identified by name, then we might need some other question that says just something like kind of what kind of registry do you operate?
Thank you, Susan. Kathy?
Sorry, coming off mute. Following up on what Susan just said, if they're not going to answer the question of who they are, and following up to what Greg said about the value of knowing if they're large or small, is our survey response looking at the policies of one registry or really the policies of 200? If we make the field optional for who are you, then can we make it mandatory for do you operate more than 10 registries, for example, so that we do know the answer to that question, are you large or small? Are we looking at a one-shot deal, or are we looking at something across many registries? Thanks.
Thanks, and there's no one in the queue at the moment.
Okay. I think it would be useful, but of course, would be interested in what the data sub-team thinks. I think it would be useful to have that kind of question of, essentially kind of how many TLDs are you operating so we can have a little bit of an understanding as to how, and so I think that will be useful to include, and as Stacey was noting, it's question two up there, but if there's concern that individuals might, for whatever reason, not want to answer that kind of question and then would drop out of taking the survey, that would be useful to understand.
Thank you. And Christine, you are in the queue. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Christine Durain, for the record. I agree with what Kathy said. I mean, I think there is, I mean, obviously we do want some demographic data. And I think when it says approximately how many TLDs do you operate and then you ask them to provide a total number, I think that's a little bit incongruous because if you're going to ask them to type it in, that theoretically they're going to put that number. I think maybe what you could do in order to kind of make people, I mean, because Amazon's 52, right? No one else operates 52. If I write 52, you're going to know who responded to that survey, right? So it might be useful to identify four or five bands, kind of by taking a look at how many are operated by various people and then have, 100 or more, 50 to 100, and then there could be smaller bands, one to two, three to five. I mean, because there's a lot of clutter in the fewer category and there's not much in the larger category. So I think, you could have a drop down there with bands and then that would let us classify answers by large registries tend to say, medium registries tend to say, small registries or micro registries or whatever. And then I haven't got this far yet, but I'm hoping we're asking a brand TLD. Do you operate any brands? You can kind of screen by that too. So I do support the idea of maybe having a drop down there rather than a text box. Thanks.
This is Greg. I think that's a very good suggestion, so we'll revise that question to accommodate for the drop-down field.
Thank you. Thanks. And there's no one in the queue. And I'll just, you know, this is all extremely helpful, this back and forth. And staff is trying to note all these things as well to capture them. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. I think what we'll plan on doing for each of the surveys that we go through today will focus largely on the kind of the comment bubbles that we've inserted, as well as a couple of areas where we could potentially use a little bit of help or information from the data subteam. But as we're going through the survey, please, of course, feel free to stop us and ask us any questions about the specific questions in the survey. So on the first page, it's comment bubble 2. One thing we wanted to raise as a possibility, given the current length of the survey, it's relatively long, is the idea of splitting the survey into two parts and asking some subset of registries to respond to one of those parts and the other subset of registries to respond to the other set, just to make the survey a little bit shorter. And you know, kind of the downside of that is obviously we wouldn't be getting the complete set of responses from each registry, but we might get more responses in total. So there are obviously kind of pros and cons of that approach, and thus wanted to get your all's input on that idea.
And I see Susan with her hand up. Please go ahead, Susan.
Sorry, lost my mic. I can understand why you're suggesting that, Greg, and I think there's I think that might be welcome to respondents, but I don't think we're going to have a big enough pool of registry operators if it's one registry operator. I don't think we're going to have a big enough pool to do that. We already had a discussion about whether there were even 50. And you know, if you then do half and half, you know, how valid are the responses if you know, only kind of 10 or so people answer or 10 or so registry answer each half of the survey? I'm assuming they're not all going to answer.
Thank you, Susan. And Christine, please go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with Susan. And I think, I mean, we're looking at both question 3 and question 4. So you say, do you operate restricted TLDs, which is an undefined term? Restricted TLDs is not an ICANN term. So no one's going to know what that means. And then we say, question 4, how many of your TLDs are community GO, restricted vitality terms, et cetera? So, excuse me, you've already got two questions in there about restrictions. I suggest here what you might want to do is say, of the TLDs that you operate, you know, what percentage would you say approximately are, you know, community-related, geo-related, restricted by eligibility terms, brand? You know, we can come up, we had probably et cetera in there because we wanted to come back and think about what the categories might be. But we were interested in figuring out if the TLDs are for, if someone says, I have operate two TLDs and they're both geo, then their answers might be really, they might really struggle with a specific aspect of the RPMs. Maybe they are specific, we asked some questions later about the way the sunrise period worked, and in whether or not there was enough sort of, I'm having a hard time formulating my thoughts today, but the sort of the pre-launch founders type programs for GEO who wanted to have more options. So there's some things that we think we are specific to specific types of TLDs. There are some concerns that we think specific types of TLDs have, and we're trying to get at that. And so by asking people to sort of self-identify how many of them are community GEO restricted, et cetera, I think that that was what we were trying to get at there. I don't think we want to send separate surveys to people. I agree with Susan on that, but I think we can parse the data once we have it a little bit better. And, okay, I'll stop.
No, that's helpful background. So we'll revise those questions accordingly as well. Thanks.
Thanks, and there's no one in the queue, so back to you, Greg.
Great, thank you. So I don't think we really have much in the way of comments or requests until we get to the top of the third page of the survey. But I'll kind of slowly scroll down there, and if there are any questions before question 12, please just feel free to jump in. Sounds like
No, Greg, just noting there's no hands up, so please go ahead.
Great, thank you. So question 12 is the question that begins with, would you support an ICANN policy that require registry operators to publish their reserve name lists? And we have, they can answer yes, no, or don't know, and sure. If they say no, there was a question as to why they didn't. And we were hoping, I think we had one option that I believe the data subteam had put together, which was such publication would violate local laws. And we were hoping that there could be additional options that we would provide there, but we were not aware of what those exactly would be. So if it's easy for anyone on the phone call, either now or after the call, to send us some options, that would be great. If not, I think we would just want to convert this question into essentially an open text field where they would type why not, their response to why not.
And Greg, Susan Payne has her hand up. Susan?
Sorry, actually, I had my hand up about a previous section, previous bit. I wanted to put it up just as you said, let's go on to 12. So perhaps if anyone has anything they want to say in relation to 12, we could do that first. Sorry.
Susan, I'm not seeing any other hands, so please go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, so apologies then, but I'm going to drag us back to, I think it's the bottom of page 2, I think. And there are various questions about numbers of Sunrise registrations and pricing for Sunrise regions, which have been deleted, and Stacey Chan has made the comment that questioned whether registry operators would know this, and also suggested that the data would be probably too sensitive to get responses. Now, of course, these may have been deleted but moved somewhere else, and I'm, you know, this is kind of the first time I'm looking at this, but I mean, this was, I think when we were asking this, we knew that it was quite sensitive. I mean, it's kind of the point of the survey is to seek to elicit some information about numbers of Sunrise registrations and pricing. So I'm not sure what the point is if we take all of this out.
Sure. Thanks, Susan. Stacey. So we did remove those. I think I understand your concern and the interest in at least trying to collect the information. We certainly can. This was a result, I think, of us just trying to find places where the survey could potentially be shortened, and it seemed like those questions had high potential for being dropped just because the expected response rate was low. When we worked on the TMCA review, and we were requesting this kind of data from registry operators explicitly, it was very difficult to have them share that with us on an individual basis, even with promises of how the data would be protected. So it seemed like asking for that type of information through a survey instrument in this style would be unlikely to elicit responses.
And it also, I think another concern of ours was that it could also just lead to higher dropout of respondents as they were going through the survey.
Right.
Can I reply? I completely understand that. I mean, that's, you know, having said that I had reservations at this whole exercise from the outset, I mean, that's one of them, is that, you know, it seems to me that we're attempting to get information which has been attemptedly and failed. But at the same time, you know, these are things that we as a group, you know, wanted to have. Now, maybe we won't get things like premium pricing, but some of the questions about the one that was numbered 16 about having received complaints about your pricing levels or something like that, or you know, some of the higher numbers of those of that bunch that have been deleted. I mean, I just, as I say, I mean, I think this was the point of the survey, and I'm just not sure why we're doing it.
No, that's helpful, and you know, we're certainly willing, you know, to add questions like that back in. I think one of the purposes of this call and kind of our, you know, future interactions with all of you is to make sure that we're, you know, really asking the right set of questions. And so, like I said, we're certainly amenable to adding it back in, you know, with the caveat that there are, it does raise some kind of potential issues with the types of responses we'll get and respondent dropout.
And I see Christine has her hand up. Please go ahead, Christine.
Thank you, Christine Durain, for the transcript. I fully support everything Susan said, and I'm not going to repeat it. I wanted to simply mention also that one of the reasons why these questions 11 through, I guess, 21 that are stricken, we know they're long, we know they're complicated, and we know the survey was going to be really, really kind of draconian with them. But we are open to rewording suggestions or other ways to sort of try to get at that same data. So, so when you say, oh, yeah, if you feel strongly, we can add them back in, I think our working group also equally wants to work with you to see that the questions are worded in a way that might lead to answers. I agree with Susan in that I also did not want to ask a bunch of these questions on a personal level, but have disagreed and committed with, as we call it at Amazon, with the group and determined that we were going to answer them or ask them. And I think we do need to find some way to get this type of Sunrise information. If you look at specifically the deleted question 17, regardless of your answers above, do you have suggestions for other policies that would have made Sunrise more effective and balanced in protecting brand owners' rights in your TLDs? I know that the anecdotal questions are tough, but we want the people in the trenches to not only give us some data, but also give us feedback. What could have been done differently? If we're going to launch a next round, and all likelihood we are, you know, what should we do differently? If Sunrise was draconian and egregious for you, give us the data. But even if you can't give us the data, tell us what was awful, or at a minimum, tell us what you would do differently. People have, these GTLD registry operators have really great suggestions about stuff that they, ideas they've had, and ways that they can come up with to try to fix the problems. And this is our way of trying to gather it. So I'm encouraging you to kind of read deeper into our questions and trying to figure out what we can pull as far as learnings and knowledge from the people that have participated and lived through all of this. I have a follow-up question, and I don't even know if this is for Julie or who, but, you know, we've skipped all of page two. And maybe I missed it at the beginning. What's our plan for going through this line by line and kind of tweaking? For instance, under the new question six, I think, do you offer premium pricing for names in the TMCH? Registry operators don't know what names are in the TMCH. They offer premium pricing, but the registries don't know what names are in the TMCH. So the wording of the question's odd. What's the best way that we as a group are going to fix this? Is that what tomorrow's call is about? So I'm really sorry to take us back to a purely administrative question, but those are my two points. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christine, and this is Julie Headland from staff. Really, we want to make this as useful for the sub-team members as possible, and we didn't really mean to suggest any particular approach, and if it's helpful to go line by line and I think Greg was starting to do that, and just letting sub-team members bring up any issues that they note, like the one you just mentioned, I think that's an excellent approach. I think we are going to easily fill up the time both today and tomorrow at this rate. So we do, and probably making sure we're as thorough as possible is a good way to go. So perhaps then we can go back to this page, at least go back to the note that you just raised with respect to question 7. And so also then you would suggest not adding in the text for names in the TMCH? Christine?
Yeah, thank you. This is Christine. Well, then in that case, I need to back up even further because if we do a lumped together question three and question four, which is sort of, I think, my suggestion, which doesn't have to be taken, but what percentage of your TLDs were community GL restricted by eligibility terms, brand? And in that case, you would also want to lump in Q5, IDN TLDs. And then we have the question of any second level domains and IDN scripts, which I can't remember why we have that. It seems relevant, but I'll have to go back and look at my notes. And then if nobody else has any other questions, seeing no other hands with questions up through the new Q6, then yes, I'm suggesting that we need to not say four names in the trademark clearinghouse, because the registry operators won't know if they have names in the trademark clearinghouse. I don't know if anybody else has any questions or thoughts about how we could word them. What I really wish I had in front of me, and I don't, is like our original table, because I have, and maybe there can be a link in the chat, but I'd like to compare that to what we originally had in the table and how it was linked to some of the other questions to figure out if there was sort of like a transitional set of questions that they were building on, and I'm not entirely sure if what we were going for there. Anyone else? Feel free to jump in, but I'm leaving off here on Q6.
Yeah, and that's all very helpful feedback, by the way, and I think to one of your earlier points, we'll be sure to go back and add in any questions that that we did remove, like the ones that we were just discussing, because I think that it was very helpful background. I totally understand that and agree with that. I'd also say that, we're certainly, I think, as we're going through it, it's really also very helpful to get these kind of line edits for specific questions. To the extent after this call, there are others, we're also happy to get red lines sent our way so that we can integrate them into the survey instrument as well. I will note just on Q7, the original bullet in the Appendix A, that did you offer premium pricing and then in parentheses during Sunrise for names in the TMCH? But we would.
Yeah, I think I misspoke. This is Christine. I said Q6. I think that's Q7. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So we would definitely welcome any kind of revisions to that language from the group.
And Greg, there's no hands up right now, so maybe if you want to just proceed then to question 8 and go question by question, that might be the right approach.
That sounds good. So maybe if this works for everyone, I'll just kind of call out question numbers and pause to let everyone review the question, and then if there are any suggested changes, we can discuss them. Yeah, so question 8 is just, on average, were your Sunrise prices higher than your standard general availability prices? And I'll note, I think this question was designed to kind of address the question, or at least one of the questions that we removed, where we actually asked them for their Sunrise pricing. So this question could, in theory, I think, be removed once we add in the other question.
Greg, I'm not seeing any hands up.
Great. Yeah, and then there's kind of a follow-up to question 8, which is question 8A. Which I said, if your prices were higher kind of during the Sunrise, what's kind of the kind of on average, how much higher were your Sunrise prices as opposed to the general availability prices? Which once again could get removed if we add in a specific question where we actually ask them what their Sunrise prices was. Or we could keep both. People might be a little bit more likely to answer the current question 8 and 8A.
Not seeing any hands up, Greg.
Great, thank you. Question 9, did you take any steps to avoid overlap between premium pricing and Sunrise registrations? And then if they said yes, there's once again a follow-up, which is question 9A.
And Christine has her hand up.
Thank you. This is Christine Doreen. I have to guess that we didn't write this. Again, because it kind of goes back to the same, it kind of goes back to that same question 7 about premium pricing for names in the clearinghouse. Because you can't, a registry operator has to establish premium pricing before it launches. And, or, you know, at some point before a domain name is sold. And a Sunrise registration has happened after the domain name is purchased, right? And so you can set your Sunrise pricing and you can set your premium pricing. But again, the registry operator doesn't know what is in the trademark clearinghouse when it sets its pricing, even when it picks and chooses, even if it picked and chose domain names, even if it picked and chose brand names to set at premium pricing, it wouldn't know if those names would be eligible for Sunrise registrations because it wouldn't know if they were in the trademark clearinghouse. So the question itself is not going to be answerable by a registry operator. I would like to get more information about what it is. Apparently you are maybe trying to sort of amalgamate some of the other questions into this. So what were you thinking or hoping to get with this question? Or maybe someone else can weigh in on what they think we could pull out of this question. Thanks.
And thanks, Christine. Susan has her hand up. Susan, please.
Hi. Yes. I'm sort of agreeing with Christine at this, and also sort of disagreeing. I agree that I think the registry operator, you're correct that they don't know what's in the trademark clearinghouse, but I think this may be some kind of an amalgamation of some of the questions we were asking originally about what did the registry do if they received complaints about their Sunrise pricing, or you know that they had set a name as premium that turned out to be a brand name, and that might be a deliberate thing, you know, in the sense that there are plenty of famous trademarks which it's inconceivable that they were set at premium without knowledge of the brand. But there are also, you know, equally it could be inadvertent. And so I think maybe this is how some of our attempts to get to that information have ended up being slightly reworded. Probably some of the stuff in the section that's directly above that question 9, I think. But I'll defer to Stacey.
Yep. Thank you. So this is Stacey. So this question actually is a question that we took directly from the appendix to RFP. I'm not sure if anyone has that open, but it is in the first row of the survey for registry operators under anecdotal questions, and it was phrased as, what steps did you take to avoid overlap between premium pricing and Sunrise registrations? If so, how did that work? So I'm not sure if whoever drafted that question is on the call and might be able to also explain what the logic was behind the question.
I see that Christine has her hand up. Please go ahead.
This is Christine. These were all drafted by committee. So no one person drafted them, but this was my section, which is probably why I'm speaking up the most on this section. This was the result, if you look at all the anecdotes, it was a series of questions going from, you know, there were pricing, there was Sunrise pricing. There was incidences where brand names were marked as premium. And what we're trying to get at there, and that's this, I'm trying to refresh my recollection here, and it's hard to do in real time, I apologize. We want to know about did the registry operator consciously try to avoid any situations where they inadvertently priced brand names as premium names. Now, it's kind of the reverse because there are people in this group and people in the community who have made the frequent allegation that some registry operators targeted brand names for premium pricing. And I'm not going to opine on that. But there, so we agreed as a group that nobody was going to raise their hand and say, yes, I targeted brands with my premium pricing. We just decided that was not going to happen. So what we thought we would do is try to come at it from the back way and ask about sort of set the stage for Sunrise pricing, premium pricing, and then, hey, if you noticed that there was kind of a potential for a problem, did you do anything to try to mitigate that? And one of the reasons we thought we would answer that question and why it was listed as anecdotal is because we thought that the solutions that registry operators might have come up with to solve that problem would be something that we could take into account as a full, you know, under advisement for the full working group. This could be great. That, as I recall, and others on the call, correct me if I'm wrong, but that, I believe, is how we got there. And unfortunately, again, to the point, 11 through 21 condensed down into just the new question 9, that's the problem, I think, here. So I don't know how to get at all of that in a new question or a new 2 questions, but that's sort of the back history, and maybe that will help you guys as you're kind of recrafting these. And it looks like Susan might be agreeing with me, but I know she's perfectly capable of jumping on the call if she doesn't. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Greg, there's no one in queue at the moment.
Okay, no, and that's really helpful background, so thanks. We can definitely take a stab at recrafting either that question or a couple of questions to get at that point, so thank you. And I think with that, we can go now down to question 10, which begins with, did you check to see if your reserve name lists? And we'll see if we have any thoughts or questions on that question.
Christine, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Christine. I really hope other people will join the call and participate, not just me. I expect everyone else to just talk all the time when it's your section, just so you know. Question 10, this could actually be a precursor to what is currently question 9. So if you did to see if your reserve names list inadvertently or premium names list, you could merge it, right? Reserve names or premium names, either list included trade names. So once you get to yes or no, if you say, yes, I did check, then you possibly as a better segue, did you take steps to avoid overlap between premium pricing and Sunrise registrations? And you could even ask another follow-up, you know, I mean, it could relate to reserve names also, like, you know, why would you reserve a trademark name? And then maybe let them answer. Some people may have reserved them or allegedly reserved them in any case, so that they could, you know, make sure that the trademark owner didn't get cyber squatted. So there's some ways, I think, maybe to merge question 9 and question 10 there that I'm thinking about. Thanks.
Great. No, thank you. That's very helpful.
No one's in queue, Greg.
Great. We'll now go to question 11, which begins with, reserve names for political or legal reasons? And there's also 2 follow-ups to question 11 and 11A and 11B.
No hands are up.
Great. We're going to move down.
I take that back. Christine, hands is up.
Great.
Thank you. This is Christine. I'm afraid you're not going to get off that easily. Question 11, and I know that this is one question I think that we had and you just sort of copied right from the list, because I haven't seen ahead yet, I know that we get down later to the reservation or the use of names of, like geo or city PLDs for political or public policy type reasons specific to the use of the TLD. Do you happen to know, is that a separate section or did you intend to sort of include that up here? The reason I ask is because as the registry operator is reading through this, I'm specifically thinking for those of us on the call who knows what Maxime's concerns are. Maxime is very concerned about, geos not being able to get like police and fire and some of those other words, you know, because they were on the trademark clearinghouse list or something, and we're not able to reserve those in that sort of initial launch period. And so the person taking the survey, the survey respondent, might confuse this question with a question related to sort of an attempt to use these names for community purposes as part of the purpose of the PLD. So I'm just a little bit concerned that the taker of the survey might misinterpret this question, given that I know that we've got some questions coming up about the geonames and that sort of thing. Any thoughts or there about how that might be related?
So this is Greg. I can certainly see why there would be confusion based on what you were just saying, and that makes a lot of sense. We do have at least one question later about or with respect to the community and GeoTLDs. So it's question 22 in the survey. I think what I'm hearing here is we need to kind of take a shot or kind of take a stab at revising the language in question 11 just to make it clear to the respondent, but I'm happy to discuss other alternatives.
Yeah, this is Christine again. I don't know that needs to be, maybe just to paraphrase, I don't think we need to make it specific to a respondent, just I think we need to make it clear here that this is not the same as the reserve names question, but even furthermore, is possible or should we consider, like I said, I haven't seen ahead to, what did you say, it was question 21 or something? Is it possible or should we actually lump those two questions together? I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm looking at maybe 23. Is there any rationale, yes or no, I don't know, for lumping 11 and 23 together? Since they are kind of related similarly, you've got your mindset going on the legal and political. Maybe not. Maybe it would be more confusing. So I'm just literally brainstorming right here.
No, that's great. And I don't have a definitive answer, at least for the moment, but we will consider that. That's a good idea.
No hands are up.
Great. I think we'll now move to question 12. Which begins with, would you support an ICANN policy? And here we did take this language is, I think, taken from the Appendix A language. And I guess one thing just to note is it seems at least technical to me. And so I want to make sure that registry operators who are taking this survey will understand the language as it's been written here.
Kathy has her hand up. Kathy, please go ahead.
The first few times I read this question, it almost required word, sorry, this is nitpicking, but required is past tense, and it made me think that this is a policy that already exists versus one that would exist. I don't know if there's a way to clarify that a little bit, but if people are going to be scanning these things, that might help. Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks, Kathy. Christine?
Greg? Did you want to finish responding? I'm sorry.
No, I'm complete, but thank you for asking.
Okay, this is Christine Durain. I think you just copied this right off our list, and that's fine. I wonder if now that we've had a chance to think back, I know not everyone is on the call. Some of us, including myself, also agree that the reference to a modification to Section 133 of Spec 1 of the RA is sort of too much in the weeds and no one's ever really going to look that up. And by the way, I don't know that anybody really cares how it happens. If they think that registry operators should publish their reserve names lists, I don't know that anybody cares the how. They just care that it does happen. It may be something worth just taking a temperature on tomorrow, anyone on the call, if the group feels good about walking that back. I don't think we had a full consensus on whether that specific comment should be there, and it's possible that given time, the people that felt strongly that it should be there may decide that it shouldn't or not. I can't speak for the group, but I think we definitely need to add that to the list of things that we review internally. So for staff taking notes, could you make a note that we need to discuss that internally and see if our temperatures changed on that specific addition to question 12? Thank you.
Thanks, Christine, and noted for staff. No other hands are up, Greg.
Okay, thank you. I think with that, we'll move to question 13, which begins with, would you support a requirement to offer domain names on the reserve list? And then we also have follow-ups here with open text fields to ask individuals why they either said they would or they would not support that.
I'm not seeing any hands. Go ahead, Greg.
Great, thank you. So we'll move to question 14 then, which begins with, would you support a requirement to notify brand owners when a reserve name matching a TMC entry is sold to a third party?
Is that somebody trying to speak?
Yeah, this is Kathy.
Okay, Kathy, please go ahead.
Great. Didn't Christine say that, legitimately so, that registry operators wouldn't know when a reserve name matches a TMCH entry? So is question 14 kind of in the category of impossible? More question, I think, to our sub-team than to others, than to you, Greg.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and it's on my mind as well.
And Christine, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Christine. I think, good point, Kathy. I appreciate the catch. I think in this case, what we're really talking about is sort of a quasi-perpetual claims period. So what I think we're talking about here is that in some cases, the operators will have a reserve name list. And once that reserve, and after the claims period is completely over, the allegation is that registry operators will sell reserve names, but now the reserve names are no longer subject to the claims period. And so the brand owner never gets notified when that domain name is sold. And so I think what they're saying is essentially, rather than a claims period being linked to the PLD launch, the claims period essentially becomes linked to a specific domain name. So from a certain period from when a reserve name is then now sold or put out there, then it would be, when you take it off the reserve name list, you have to offer it. But I think when you just sell it to a third party, you don't have to notify the brand owner. And I think that is the sort of gap that this specific question is trying to address, if that answers your question. Thanks.
And Kathy?
Yeah. Sorry, my brain's kind of hurting on this one then, but thank you for the explanation, Christine. If we're trying to do a policy question through, I think we should make it a lot clearer, because I didn't understand this question, and I'm not sure others will either. If we are talking about kind of a perpetual trademark claims question, I'm not sure this is the place or the way to ask it. I think there may be other, you know, it sounds like a question that could come from the working group in an introductory report, in an initial report. But I think here it's going to be very confusing.
Thank you, Kathy. Christine?
Thanks. This is Christine. I appreciate that thought, Kathy. I think was probably, as with every question, are opportunities for improvement in the wording. I think this wording is fairly close to what we actually came up with as a group, and though noting that we may have been dissatisfied with this wording originally. I will say, from a registry operator perspective, I don't think this would be a confusing question. I do understand that maybe for registrants or for, you know, other parties, that it might be a confusing question, and I think we're going to ask a similar question to brand owners, and so I think we definitely want to flag it and make sure that brand owners really understand the underlying background of why this question is being asked, because I agree with you that I think that the average person is not going to understand it, but I think in this specific instance, registry operator will understand this specific question, though I'm definitely happy to work on some rewording to make it a little more clear if you guys think it's important. Thanks.
But Christine, again, if the registry operator doesn't know what's in the TMCH, how do they know? How can they support a requirement for them? Because you're saying this is a question directed towards registries, for them to notify brand owners when a reserve name matches something on the reserve list. They can't, right?
Yeah, Kathy, I read the question to say, would you support a requirement to notify? I didn't read it that the registry operator had to. I mean, this kind of done by the claim service automatically. And it, because the I think the theory would be, like, it could be all done electronically or whatever. I mean, I don't know that we're trying to decide the how at this point. I think we're just discussing if it's such a thing is theoretically possible. The registry operator doesn't have to know what the doesn't have to know what's in the Trademark Clearinghouse to comply with this, because the registrar, who does know what's in the Trademark Clearinghouse and does ping the clearinghouse, would know when a domain name is sold off of the reserve net list. And so there could be some plugging and playing of you know, EPP codes or some magic that I don't fully understand. So I take your point, and I do agree that perhaps we maybe need to clarify that people reading the question shouldn't get bogged down in the how. But what would, you know, I think what we're trying to get at here is we want to know both registry operators what they would think of that as a policy or as a suggestion. And then, I think we're going to ask other parties later the same question. So we're trying to give everybody the chance to say, you know, if we make this policy recommendation, what do you think of that? Does that help a little, or do you still think it should be waited, you know, we should wait till the public comment period to get that?
I think we should do a public comment period, but if you're saying this is an original question, then I'll get through it. I think a lot of people probably won't answer it because of kind of the levels of complexity, but we can leave it in.
So thank you for that, for both of you. I'm going to suggest in the interest of time that we move along. Kathy, if you have any suggested rewording for this question, if we do want to keep it in, we'll certainly welcome that as well. Over to you, Greg.
Thanks. This is Stacey, so I'll be driving for a little bit here. This next section is on focuses on the questions about the sunrise period length. So if you're following along and the original appendix, this is on page 3, answering the charter questions, does the current 30-day minimum sunrise period serve its intended purpose, et cetera. So the first question is, did you run any sunrise period for longer than, I'm having difficulty.
60 days, I heard of.
60 days. And the respondent can answer yes, no, or I'm not sure. And the follow-up question is, if yes, then for how long were you running that sunrise period?
Thank you, Stacey. I see hands up from Kathy and Christine. Kathy?
Thanks, Joyce.
Thank you. Christine?
Thank you. This is Christine. Why did you change the number from the original team question from 30 to 60 days? The minimum period is 30 days. So why did you change it for longer than 60? Thank you.
You know, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure. I actually think that it should be 30 days.
Yes, I agree. This is Stacey.
Yeah, I think it was just a small error that crept in, so apologies for that.
Thank you. Go ahead, no hands. I think Kathy's hand, Kathy, if you could put your hand down, I think it's an old hand.
Okay, thank you. The next question, I think we've converted a question. The question now reads, how likely do you think a 30-day sunrise period is to have the following outcomes? And we suggested a few outcomes. We are definitely open to and hoping that this group might have a few other suggestions. This question, I'm scanning the appendix to try and see which question it was intended to replace. I think this was intended to get at the questions about do you think the 30-day minimum sunrise period is effective in preventing cyber squatting, which is why prevent cyber squatting is the first option. I think if the group is interested in other consequences that registry operators perceive to be related to the sunrise period, that's what the other options are intended to get at.
Go ahead, Christine.
Thank you. This is Christine. I'm going to have to study this. My initial reaction is it took me a minute. How likely do you think a 30-day sunrise period is to have the following outcomes? Because the current sunrise period minimum is 30 days, I think that the question itself needs to be clarified. Something along the lines of, does the current 30-day minimum sunrise period, blah? And then, and maybe even forecast to the survey respondent that you're going to also ask them the same questions for a longer than 30-day period, just so that they know why they're being asked. Because you're trying to get at, is it better or worse to lengthen the sunrise period? So then you can go to the next one and say if sunrise period is mandatorily longer than 30 days, how likely is this outcome supposed to be? And I'm trying to skim ahead to 19, explain the ranking you provided. Okay. So that could explain people might say, well, 40 days would be fine or 60 days would be fine, but a sunrise period longer than 30 days could be unlimited. It could be 120 days or 365 days or 1,000 days. I mean, the answer will be different depending on what number longer than 30 it is. And the problem is that your survey respondent is not going, they're all going to have different ideas. Some people will in their mind think 60, some people will think 90, some people will think 120. And I think you're going to have to control for that and figure out, give them some sort of parameters to think about before they can answer question 17. So I think the questions on Q17 and Q16 need to be reworded, and I haven't had a chance to dig into the actual table yet.
Thank you, Christine. There's no other hands up. Stacey?
Thanks, Christine. I appreciate that feedback. That's really helpful. Do you think that it would be helpful on question 17 for us to suggest a length of time for the respondent to be thinking about? Or alternatively, we could insert a question asking them what they think the ideal length for a sunrise period would be? And then
this is Christine. I think some registry operators will say zero if you ask, which is fine, but just so you know. And I think, and this is maybe even to Michael Graham's point in the chat about the comparison, I don't even know how complicated this would be as a survey. But if for each of these answers, if they were allowed to rank on a scale of 1 to 5 for 30-day, some period between 31 and 90, some period from 91 to 120. Just obviously put an outside, and then sort of we can see if there's a distribution of people that think, small, medium, or large are better or worse or whatever. I think there could be a possibility, and then it wouldn't require two tables. But again, that would be beyond my specific technological expertise for survey design. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Kathy?
Kathy. Could you tell us what the original question was? And also, did you add the term prevent cyber squatting? And after that, I'll stay in the queue. Thanks.
Sure, this is Stacey. So the question that I'm seeing in the original draft is, do you think the 30-day minimum sunrise period is effective in preventing cyber squatting? With a follow-up of why or why not? There are also questions focused on periods longer than 30 days. So there's a question that reads, if you run any sunrise period for longer than 30 days, so that would be limited to respondents who offered a longer sunrise period, what were the benefits to the registry or to brand owners? What were the drawbacks? Were there any complaints or was anyone confused? And then in parentheses, include complaints from potential non-brand owner registrants.
So a lot of it's been excluded, hasn't it, including complaints from non-brand owners. So this seems, kind of the balance that was in the original questions doesn't seem to be reflected now in Q16 and Q17, because the sunrise period is a benefit for some, a burden, a technical burden for some, a registration burden for some. So I don't see that balance now reflected for both registries, registrars, registrants, trademark owners, and in these new versions. Thanks.
Please go ahead, Christine.
Thank you. This is Christine. Yeah, I agree with Kathy. I do appreciate your efforts to sort of quantify what we were trying to get at. In looking at our original questions, they were extremely open-ended and vague, and looking for sort of detailed, descriptive, textual answers. I think that to the extent that we, you recommend that we have a way to categorize or enumerate, and I do believe that this working group would support any time we can gather data, not just textual answers. So maybe we can have when we do meet as a group, maybe this can be another one of our action items to look back and actually walk through elements, I guess, and determine, if this does sort of address the concerns that we had listed in our more open-ended questions, and if we need to add or edit, then at least the group can do that together as a group. Because I agree with Kathy, that what you've done, I think, is a good effort, but I don't think it's captured necessarily the full range of our concerns, and I think we want to make sure that we're not accidentally leaving something on the table by going from the vague to the definitive, if that's even possible. Thanks.
Kathy, you have your hand up still. Is that a new hand or an old hand?
Yeah. So procedurally, and obviously this is with my co-chair hat off because I don't know either. Procedurally, how do we do this in the tight time frame? Do we recommend that Q16 and 17 kind of be deleted in their current format because it would take too long to revise it, and because what comes back may not be helpful to the policymaking process because it's not a complete and balanced set of inquiries that we're going after? Or do we have the time to go back and play with this? My sense is the latter, that we don't. So do we recommend that something that we have some serious concerns about just be deleted from the current survey? And especially with policy implications, it might be something we can separately include in the initial report that we'll be putting out for phase one.
Thank you, Kathy. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, just putting myself in queue. To answer your question, I see Christine has her hand up too, but just procedurally, the intent was that the sub-team would finalize these questions with analysis group, which is what we're hoping to be doing now and in tomorrow's call. And then analysis group would send the final version of the survey to the working group really just as a preview. We were not anticipating an editing session back at the working group level. The working group was anticipating to accept what the sub-team has produced with analysis group. But please go ahead, Christine, as well.
Yeah, this is Christine, and I am mindful of making sure that we try to stay on task here, but I'm not, I like the fact that we're trying to quantify this, and I do understand that it could take time to a day or half, a call to try to solidify what vacation looks like. But I mean, and we do have the questions that were deleted, but they are really open-ended and really vague, and I think that we have the potential to get some good data if we turn these into a drop-down or whatever this format is. I would really strongly prefer to add a day, add a call, and work through it if it's possible, because I think what's the biggest pushback that everybody's gotten is we don't have numbers, we don't have data, we don't have any data. And any place we can take, and we've asked the analysis to do this, we've asked them to help us quantify some of these more textual questions. And so if we can turn some of these questions into a more, analytical, numbers-driven question, then I think we're going to win. I'm happy to spend some time today trying to come up with some language and circulate it, but I think we're all going to have to commit to doing homework and maybe even one more call. But I really think we should try to get this question right, because this is really important. We don't have good data about, what the effect of a 30-day sunrise or longer is.
Thank you. This is Julie Headland again from staff. So we do have a call, another 90-minute call tomorrow, and really then, you know, we had anticipated sending the results to analysis group, you know, the combination of all of this sub-team's comments to analysis group by this Friday. If we do want to extend and add at least one more call, and given that we are really only just four pages into one of the surveys, I think it seems without a lot of homework, as you mentioned, Christine, homework, it's hard to see how we would be able to complete everything by tomorrow. And so that begs the question as to whether or not if we extend, then we're going to have to consider what that does to the timeline and in particular for analysis group to be able to meet what was the deadline that was given to them, which was to have the surveys ready to go out the week of on June 20th. So just some of those things there, and we're really looking at 6 minutes left on this scheduled call. But I see you have your hand up, Christine, and I see also Kathy has her hand up as well.
Thanks. This is Christine. I completely understand, and I feel bad, Julie, even suggesting it, but. And I think Susan started out the call pointing it out, but I don't think that we can sacrifice the quality of this survey. We have clamored and clamored and clamored for some data because all we is making decisions at this point off of people's stories. And so what is the point of doing all of this if we can't get some actual data? It's no point putting out a half-baked survey just to meet the timeline. And I understand the pressure of the timelines. I agree with Susan. We've both pressed the timeline issue. But I don't think this is the place to cut the corner. I just don't think so. Maybe we need to hustle and have more calls, but I don't think we can cut on the survey. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
And thank you, Christine. I see Phil has his hand up, but I just wanted to add, and I apologize, staff did not suggest cutting corners or not working to make these questions better. We're just struggling to try to see how we can do that within the timeline unless we get guidance from the co-chairs that we change the timeline and send the surveys out at a later date. But let me go ahead and defer to Phil.
Yeah. Thank you, Julie. Let me start out by asking a question. In terms of timeline, is there a contractual requirement that analysis group get this out by a certain date? What are we dealing with contractually in terms of flexibility on this?
Thank you, Phil. So part of what was in the RFP was a timeline, and so yes, to an extent, we've given direction to analysis group to do the work within a certain period of time. I think that we can change that, but that doesn't mean that we give analysis group, of course, less time to do what they're doing. That means that we change the timeline in a way that they get the same amount of time that they need to do the work. And the timeline itself gets extended. We do have some wording in the contract about flexibility. So that's why staff has been making the point that if the original timeline says that we, you know, want to have the survey out by the end of June, but say we add a week to the process, then we have to consider whether or not, you know, we release the survey during ICANN 62, I think now we were talking about them going out before ICANN 62, or whether or not we release the survey in the beginning of July, but then we would not get the survey results back by the beginning of August, according to the timeline. So, and that's for the working group to, you know, the subteam and working group and the co-chairs to decide whether or not we make that shift.
All right. Let me suggest this, and you know, it shouldn't be given any particular weight because I'm a co-chair, but we did get the red lines just a few hours before this call, which made for this call there was very little advance opportunity for people to review them. I think, you know, we don't want to slip by much, but I think if we need a couple of extra days to make sure, given the importance of this survey to making final decisions and the fact that ICANN has allocated a substantial amount of money to take this survey at our request with the council signing off on that, we don't want it going out half-baked. So I would suggest, you know, and I plan to spend an hour or so going over the red lines after this call, identifying the questions that I really think need to be addressed in further discussion. Maybe tomorrow, instead of 90 minutes, we can go 2 hours, and maybe if we have to, we can schedule a Friday call as well and get as much done. Maybe we can finish this week on this review with analysis group if they're available for that call. Maybe we have to go a little bit into next week. But so I basically am saying let's do the homework. Let's add some extra time on the phone with the analysis group to get this finished as quickly as possible, but try to finish before the weekend, and if not, we may have to add an extra call or two early next week. We want to give everyone a chance for feedback on this to make sure it's right, but we don't want to, you know, go over by weeks. So I don't know what people think of that, but those are my thoughts, because obviously we can't spend 90 minutes on 4 pages when we have 5 different surveys to review. So we need to do this thoroughly, but in a somewhat more expedited manner. Thanks. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you very much, Phil. And I see Greg and Stacey have a hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks. So this is Greg speaking for the record. You know, I think we are certainly willing to be flexible in terms of the timeline. We also very much agree that kind of giving more time up front to getting the survey right is definitely where the time should be spent, as opposed to trying to decipher answers that don't make a lot of sense at the back end of the survey. I also think that in terms of the of your homework, I've seen that term being used in the chat a little bit. I think if you all have a chance to review each of the surveys, or perhaps you could consider dividing the surveys up amongst yourselves so that everyone doesn't have to review all 5. Editing in red lines and then sending those red line edits to us in advance of the call, if that were possible, that would be great. That would give us a little bit of a chance to see what you all are thinking and would probably help to focus those discussions.
Thank you very much, Greg. Appreciate that. So we're 1 minute past the end of time here. And so staff is going to suggest we have the call tomorrow. We'll ask whether or not we people's availability to extend another half an hour to make it longer, and then we'll also look at possible availability for say Friday and Monday of next week for additional calls. But that keeping in mind that we can't really, you know, we also should be mindful not to add more time into what analysis group has to do, hoping that by, as Greg says, by making things, you know, more clear at this point, that might provide for efficiencies, you know, in the sort of final development of the surveys. So let's do that. Let me look and see if there are any other comments, and I'm not seeing any other hands up. So thanks again for staying on for another couple minutes, and thank you very much, Greg and Stacey, for all your help here. And we'll look forward to talking to all of you tomorrow. Thanks.
Thank you. Today's meeting is adjourned. Bob, the operator, you can disconnect the recording line.